the challenge that we create for ourselves as entrepreneurs is really, I think, one of expectation. And it really is the ego that drives us to ask more of ourselves all the time. So I think social media and so on, they're not the cause of the problem. The cause of the problem, as far as I'm looking at it, and of course, you know, we all have different perspectives, but my sort of reflection is that it's our own ego that is the source of the problem. And what social media does is gives us a really kind of vicious echo chamber for whatever attitudes that we want to reinforce in ourselves. Win all in, play my cards right.
This podcast exists because of the team at KazCM. At KazCM, we make content creation enjoyable. We are on a mission to help leaders create content, content that will improve lives, content to be proud of, content that fosters community. We know through firsthand experience how content brings people together, and we love helping make that happen. We produce podcasts, short-form videos, blog posts, and other written works, while also providing support in website development, social media management, and strategic planning. And we would be excited to help you. Visit KazCM.com to learn more, or feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. So Premier League, English football, like, you're a fan, I take it?
Well, I guess technically, according to my friends, I wouldn't be, because I don't know when, like, in 1978, the players came out on pitch.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, yeah.
I've got friends who are fans, and they could tell you, you know, whether everyone had socks on or not. Right. You know, I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
But in England, if you're not watching football, somehow we watched the UNICEF World 11 play England last night,
yeah,
which is a great match.
Yeah.
So yeah, we love to watch.
You're supporting of it. So I would like to figure out, you know, what were interests paralleled, and especially when we're far away from one another. But one thing that's very unique here, and you being in the States and spending some time, you're at Chapel Hill, so you saw college basketball, you saw March Madness.
I was there when Dean Smith was running the place.
Yeah. So, I mean, you understand it. And that's college sports. You go to the professional level, you know, Michael Jordan's there and they're winning championships. If they're not winning championships, like, what happens to the team? What if they have a really bad season in the UK, right? In England, they get relegated. In the US, we don't have that. Teams are actually tanking for the top picks. You know, one of the top players to ever come out, to ever enter the NBA draft, will be taken first overall by the San Antonio Spurs. But typically, if that was England, that would never have happened. I'm just curious as to when you came over here, when you watch it, because now sports are just global, so we can watch everyone else's sports.
Yeah.
Does it blow your mind that we don't have this relegation process here in the US, but over there? Because it's fascinating to me. Some of the best games of the season are those last games, like, who's going down?
Yeah, I think that a couple of things. One was this, the depth of sport in the UK means that we can have relegations,
right?
I mean, there are so many teams in so many divisions, whereas in the States, you kind of had like one basketball conference, or, you know, West and East. And then the same with the football, you had collegiate, pro. But in England, we have pro, but like three leagues plus plus.
Oh, yeah.
And you get some great championships where you have people that are amateur players playing against, you know, people making more money in a week than most people do in a lifetime.
Right.
So we've got that depth of sport. So I think it keeps it really competitive. And I think the other thing about America was just the amount of money, like in collegiate sport in England, people turn up to get the free beer afterwards.
Right.
You know, whereas in America, I remember people on full scholarships.
Sure.
And it was, you know, really a layup, if you pardon the pun, to where you went for a pro, right? And in England, it's, you know, you get a job afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, so on the whole, people that go to universities don't go into professional sport in England.
Yeah.
It's not the training ground for athletes.
Yeah.
Where it is in the States. They're, interesting.
Yeah. They're going to club. And I noticed as my son was being recruited and talking to different colleges and different coaches, one of the things he saw as a goalkeeper, he wasn't competing against other 18-year-olds in this country. He's competing against 23-year-olds from England, 25-year-olds from Germany. And that was fascinating. And what I heard was that a lot of those kids that, like, they grew up in the club system, right? Over, you know, playing for the Arsenal system. And once they hit a point where they're still obviously extremely good, they're extremely talented, but they're not going to keep going up. they had a place for them in the States. They had relationships with people in the States. They would send them to college over at UNC Wilmington, at Virginia Tech, and they're 23 years old. Good luck competing against that, right? Because they're also looking for the international student athlete to come over from all these different places.
Yeah, yeah. And in different sports, a friend of mine, his daughter actually went to Arizona in track and field.
Yeah.
And she got a full scholarship. And amazing enough, Eric, she did a year. And I was like, isn't that crazy? You know, a full year spade in Arizona. She got poached to go to another university the next year.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, she's like, you know, 22-year-old English girl who in England would be getting ready for finals in America. She was being fated in the locker rooms by people with promises of even bigger, you know. So, yeah, I think that was a great aspect of American college and society, though, is that the sense that you can make it from anywhere.
Yeah.
And I think that we lack that here, really. We have much more conventional channels.
Yeah.
So I think it's part of the joy of living in America. I lived there also in Boulder, Colorado when I was 11 through 13.
Yeah.
And actually in South Carolina when I was 3 years old.
Oh, wow.
That kind of entrepreneurial can-do.
Yeah.
At all sectors of society in America is really kind of innovating, I think.
Yeah. That's interesting. Those are different places. You know, Chapel Hill. We're in South Carolina. What town?
In Charleston.
Yeah, okay.
My dad was there teaching.
Yeah, so. Good for you. That's where I went to college. So,
Yeah,
we spend a lot of time there growing up. And I was like, wait a second, I'm from New York State, you know, Western New York. So I was like, you can go to school down here. Yeah, I'll be doing that. So,
yeah. Entirely beautiful part of the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always think the Southeast states are not Florida, but Southeast, you know,
right.
Sort of North Carolina, South Carolina, I guess, really. Are kind of completely undervalued by people outside of America and even possibly inside.
Yeah.
Because, you know, parts of North Carolina, the Piedmont, and then down into Wilmington, just stunning, you know, but they don't kind of have a tourism vibe.
It's changing. I don't know about the tourism vibe, but well, Charleston's changing. Charleston, if you'd go back there today, the issue they have is infrastructure because they run out of land. Right. So they have water.
Oh,
so there's
right.
nowhere to drive and there's huge bottleneck issues. So everyone's, especially even post COVID, but even before this, you know, when I went to Charleston, they're like, where? Why would you go there? And now everyone's vacationing and traveling and moving there. And
a lot of
people, Charlotte. Yeah. Charlotte's significant growth, the Raleigh area, significant growth by the universities. And it is, it's a beautiful city. You go travel around the country, around the world, and you come back to Charlotte, you're like, wow, it's hard to find bigger cities that look like this. And I think a lot of people are taking notice, but you're not wrong in maybe being undervalued. It's just, it's happening now. It's getting a little crazy.
I should have bought when I was there.
Yeah.
And my wife, who's from Shanghai, she was in IBM. And then we used to go, you know, I didn't know her then, but I used to have my partner, the time girlfriend at the time, they used to live on that dam, you know, that nuclear water dam on the reservoir. Happy memories, Eric.
Yeah.
Asheville, some friends of mine used to live up in Asheville.
It's a beautiful place. Yeah, so it's funny too, the other part of soccer, football, that's interesting here that I've talked to people from the UK is youth sports, the cost to play and the cost to participate. So we're getting into capitalism now, thousands of dollars. At the very basic level, like soccer aside, you know, you move up one level above recreation soccer, it's couple thousand dollars. If you're playing high level, you're talking $10,000 plus travel.
Oh, you mean to play?
To play, or to be a 14-year-old and playing soccer, and where you talk to people in the UK, it's not a lot, right? If anything.
Yeah.
And they'll find you a team. Now, they own you to a point, right? You have to do certain things and follow their rules, but it's become very entrepreneurial.
How interesting is that? Because some friends of mine who I knew from Singapore, and they moved back to America. The wife is a Malay woman and they have a son who loves soccer and is very good. But yeah, they were raising money for him to play. And now you put that into context. Cause I was like, well, when we were kids, I mean, you needed boots and some shin pads and a number of other guys on the pitch, but that was about it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
One of you got the ball. So yeah, it's interesting how commercial it's all become then.
Yeah. It'll keep growing. I think there's a lot of opportunity. So in Charlotte, they got an MLS team here a couple of years ago. And the fascination, the business that's been built around that and the bar scene, just the amount of people it brings to a certain area, a lot of people have capitalized on it and for good reason. But the atmosphere is incredible. It really is. And this is MLS. So, you know, and it's not a huge sport. I think it's been compared to maybe like the sixth division of English football, right? But it's still quality. I mean, they're bringing people from all over the world. So the sport, I believe, has significant growth potential even in America. And they have the World Cup coming here in a few years. So I'm fascinated by it. And anytime I talk to someone...
Sounds like you're really...
It's interesting. Well, you know, you're talking to someone who's from the UK, someone who's an entrepreneur, has been in many businesses. There's opportunity that exists in these platforms. I mean, you look at the NFL and you look at collegiate sports, businesses are built on the back end of those mega...
Yes.
It's just an industry by itself.
And the clubs, of course, become huge industries,
yeah,
you know, in themselves too, yeah, right? That's part of, well, part of the problem in the UK now is these clubs have got so leveraged with debt.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're in danger, really, of being kind of bankrupt, really. So interesting time of the,
yeah,
you know, of the games in England. I think we're very lucky that we've got such amazing infrastructure, as you say, really, that we've got young people and old, and we've got a great depth of like college.
Yeah.
But what we're not doing really that much is winning overseas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, that's always the big question. So,
well, funny, if we attract in England, we attract a huge number of continental Europeans and Africans.
Yeah.
So our challenge is that the young guys and women, although actually our women players are doing better than our men in cricket and tennis,
mm-hmm,
and soccer. Yeah. So interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting. So you're going to be a soccer dad. And if you can get your son across here, then of course,
that's right.
That's what they have to do, right? They have to come over and play a season over here.
Yeah.
Or France or something like that.
Incredible competition around the world. But at the same time, and you know, I keep bringing up this word entrepreneur, there's opportunities in all these things. And I've seen athletes become entrepreneurs because let's say they're a soccer goalie and they want to start a glove company, or they want to start a podcast, or they want to sell tickets. I mean, if you knew that Messi was going to come to the MLS and be at Inter Miami, all of a sudden you go look at, we have season tickets to the Charlotte team. The tickets typically you can sell in the secondary market anywhere from 50 for good seats, $50, $120, bucks, $2,000 overnight.
No way.
Yeah. So it's like what you can build on the back end of any of these things is fascinating to me. So
insane. Wow. I used to go to the Boulder football stadium,
yeah,
with my friend Nathaniel. And we used to go and buy tickets from people that didn't want them at the gate, you know?
Yeah.
And resell them.
Yeah, of course. True entrepreneur right there,
wow,
right?
Yeah, because you're reminding Nathaniel. Yeah. Nathaniel Perlman. Wow. Now that takes me back. I hadn't thought of that memory.
Yeah. Yeah. I like pulling on those things a little bit. Yeah. I mean, so I think you can do whatever it is you find the fascination with for anybody. Where before we started recording here, you were talking about a career is not a career anymore. Like, what's pulling on you? What is interesting? What can you explore? Because I think once you go down that path, you learn all sorts of things by doing that thing. Like, it might have nothing to do with finance, but if you're running a business, you're going to learn finance pretty quick. And you might not have learned it in university, right? You might learn it on the streets and figuring it out as you go.
Yeah, you know, exactly. No, exactly. What did you want to cover off today on our call?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, personally, you could probably tell I like to have a conversation and I like to break the ice a little bit. I think often sports breaks the ice. I guess one of the things you could look at, it's like you're starting any business and you talked about, and you're wearing the hat, the unnoticed entrepreneur. And it's a thing that entrepreneurs have, right? Like we talk about getting into the niche. We talk about networking and meeting people and social media and media. And one thing that comes to mind with a lot of this stuff, and there's a big topic right now, obviously, and this is worldwide, and you see it in the UK, they do in the Premier League, is mental health.
Mm.
And I think entrepreneurs are going through this roller coaster of emotions, roller coasters of success and lack of success. No one knows what you're doing. Why are you doing this? Like people are questioning, should you go get a job at a large corporate company?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's difficult. And then you start talking about, well, I need to get noticed. And then you talk about social media and mental health have absolutely intersected, and it's a major problem. And you talk about vanity metrics. So a lot of what I've heard on your podcast is, how can you get featured in this article? How can you get more backlinks for SEO?
Yes.
How could you get more notice on LinkedIn? And they're all very important. And I've just wondered if you've thought about that constant reach to get more and more and to get found and to get hurt and not to be unnoticed, what that could possibly do to someone with that could lead to mental health issues, because we see it in children, but a lot of times we all talk about what the children are doing, but I see it in adults too.
Oh, it's completely.
Just different.
Yeah, completely.
You know, so how do you think about that and maybe that word vanity metrics when it comes to becoming noticed?
It's a great, great topic, Eric. I don't know if you saw, but I posted on LinkedIn the other day, on Friday, actually, about the dilemma for the entrepreneur and my own journey. And that, you know, you get to my age at 56 and you think, you know, I've been around the world. I've lived in Asia for the last 25 years. I've built, you know, businesses on three continents. You come back to where you started and you're kind of not a long way ahead. But of course, we're older and wiser and I've got an amazing family. So, but you sort of think, wow, I kind of thought I'd have more, right? And it's amazing the response. I've got like 4,000 impressions, Eric. You know, normally I get 500 or something, right? But this has gone kind of viral and as much as any of my posts have. And I think that, and a few people have rung and sent notes saying, you know, yes. And that the challenge that we create for ourselves as entrepreneurs is really, I think, one of expectation. And it really is the ego that drives us to ask more of ourselves all the time. So I think social media and so on, they're not the cause of the problem. The cause of the problem, as far as I'm looking at it, and of course, you know, we all have different perspectives, but my sort of reflection is that it's our own ego that is the source of the problem. And what social media does is gives us a really kind of vicious echo chamber for whatever attitudes that we want to reinforce in ourselves. So if we're narcissistic, if we're self-aggrandizing, or if we're, you know, into self-flagellation, as in like criticism of oneself all the time, social media enables you to put out stuff and let people to come back at you like this huge amplification chamber. So one of the things that I think that I've been working on as an entrepreneur is looking at the absolute and the relative importance of what I do. And the absolute importance of what I do to me, or the relative importance to others. And what I mean by that is that absolutely, I only need so many things, Eric. And what we do is we create this expectation of I should have, I want, and so on. But they're not necessarily what I need. They're not necessarily what I deserve. They're not necessarily going to make me happy if I get them. So that's the first thing, is I think it's about becoming aware of the difference between what we need and what we want. And it's the ego that drives the want. And that's where the source for me anyway of much of the anxiety comes from, because there's this disparity between what we need and what we want. And I got news for anybody listening, you never catch up. In my experience, you never, what you want and what you need, they are never the same. Any entrepreneur that I know says, I got to be a millionaire and it wasn't enough. I got the girl, she wasn't enough. And it's kind of in the DNA of being an entrepreneur, because you're never satisfied. That's part of the dynamo that keeps us going, Eric, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's part of the, I got to do more, there's more to be done. And so I've never managed to narrow that gap particularly. But what I have done as I've got older is to realize that there is a gap, and that I need to be nicer to myself when the gap exists and let go of that. So that's the absolute part. And then the relative part, which is where social media becomes vicious, is me compared to other people, me relative to how other people that I compare myself to are doing. And that's the really vicious part, because we often don't compare ourselves to the right people. You know, we compare ourselves to other people who have different journeys, different resources, different experiences, different connections, but we don't take those into account. We compare the results that other people have got, but we don't compare the resources. And what we really want to be doing, I think, or what I work on, is comparing myself to who I was before, right? Because actually, what really matters is that I'm becoming better, that I'm becoming as honest as I can, that I'm looking after my family and the people that I care for. So relative, changing the perspective from being, I need to judge myself against others, to I need to judge myself against my previous self. And that removes a lot of the pressure, because actually you can control what you do, but you can't control what anybody else does.
Yeah.
So on the grounds that stress comes from what you can't control, if we narrow this gap between what we expect of ourselves and what we get for ourselves, and then we compare ourselves to who we were before, to who we are today, rather than to others. For me as an entrepreneur, I'm trying to use these, if you like, techniques, Eric, you know, along with this meditation and so on, but those are zones you can get into to explore these concepts. But unless you get to the mind games, right, you can really do yourself an injury, and people do. They get burnt out, no matter how much meditation or other stuff they do, because the reflection isn't, for me, the key point. It's the understanding the framework of what I need to reflect within. We've all got our different ways of looking at Eric, but that's kind of really what I've been looking at as I've been, sort of growing, changing, succeeding, sometimes failing in other ways.
Sure. Well, there's an obvious awareness piece when you're talking that you've discovered, and I think is crucially important to have that, to understand, to say, if I'm scrolling through social media, pick at Twitter, Instagram, whatever, that you start finding yourself going there and thinking about, well, I haven't taken that vacation. And you hear about people talking about that. And or simple post on LinkedIn, like you said before, and you make that post, no one likes it. No one engages with it. What does that mean? Is no one seeing it? Why is the algorithm not supporting it? And then on the flip side of it, you hear about engagement pods, LinkedIn pods, Twitter engagement pods. You know, and I've known people who have done them, and they've all regretted, not regretted them, that's the word, but no, I don't do that anymore because it's not real. It's not sustainable. And they're feeding the ego, which is what you said before, which I completely agree with, that it's fed that, which, well, you know, like that helped in the moment, but it didn't help in the long term. And that's like going to a bar, smoking a cigarette, having a pint, right? The whole thing. And I'm not saying don't do, like, go to the bar, have a drink, right? That's great. But understanding like the limits and what that means and what's the outcome of that long term, if it's too much, if it becomes substance abuse, right? Anyway, going down that path, it's that awareness piece and feeding that ego that I hear you talking a lot about, which is super important when you're talking about getting noticed.
And I think, Eric, if I can just take that to the
please.
The other aspect about the physical dimension, about the well-being. Now, you mentioned going to the bar and having a smoke. When I moved to Singapore in 95 at 27, and on a Friday night, we'd all go to the bar and we'd have a pack of Marlboro Lights and we'd have a few pints of beer or whatever. And of course, at the time, we thought we were all socializing and happy. And then, of course, Saturday morning, you feel rough and right. Then you try and work. And I live really most of my life on the edge, I think, of alcoholism, of drinking too much, smoking too much, and then cleaning out and just kind of not being kind to my own self. Because actually what can happen is that the anxiety that we've got inside can lead us to be detached from our physical well-being. We almost beat ourselves up. Because when you look at the injuries that alcohol, cigarettes, do to the individual, to your well-being, you think, my God, I'm poisoning myself. So a few years ago, Eric, what I decided to do as I was in the middle of a very large legal case, having moved back to the UK, I went to the fridge to pick up a bottle of Chardonnay. And I thought, you know what? I don't think I can remember doing one thing that was smart or healthy or kind when I've had a drink. I think I've had fun. I think I've been funny. I think I've been attractive, but I don't think I've done anything really value enhancing for me or my life. And I put the bottle back actually, and I decided not to drink anymore, Eric. Mm. So now it's been nearly 4 years. And I got to tell you, the first 2 weeks was shit. I got to tell you. I mean, you do in England start drinking at a very early age. So we started drinking when we played rugby at the age of 10,
wow.
Right? You'd play rugby and you'd have half a pint of lager or a shandy, right? It's insane how early we start. So I didn't know any part of my life without alcohol. And in England, it's in the supermarkets, in the TV, right? And I really went through detox, like cold turkey. And I have to say, it's not a pleasant experience. But what I realized was that I needed to substitute alcohol for something, Eric. So I don't know if you remember Cheers, the old movie with Ted Danson.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Right. Brilliant. And I don't know why I remember this particular scene, but I think for any listeners who are younger, I mean, they'll know who Ted Danson is. He was a drunk, right? He was an alcoholic on the show. So he couldn't drink. And they said, what do you do instead? And he said, well, I just make sure I have a drink when I want an alcoholic drink. And so one of the small changes I made that made a big difference was I started to drink at 6 o'clock herb tea. So I realized I need a drink, but I have to substitute it for something. So we talk about mental health. I don't think we can talk about mental health without talking about physical health, Eric. And that's why I raise it, because we all make our own decisions around health. And so it's not meant to be in any way a judgment against anyone drinking or smoking. That's not my place.
Sure.
But for me, myself, I really realize that if I don't do the right things for my body, you know, and I'm putting chemicals into my body, I can't control my mind.
Yeah.
Because they are inextricably linked. And for anyone listening that's thinking about it, it's the old source of, you know, exercise, sleep, hydration, that help you to have clarity and to have better sleep. And with better sleep comes less anxiety. And then with that less anxiety and less sort of fatigue, you could do more exercise, Eric.
Yeah.
So I ran a Singapore marathon when I was 40. I ran a 3-hour 57 marathon in the tropics, right? But I then drank in the evening afterwards. I did this completely mad, you know, as so many of us entrepreneurs do, you know, extremes. And as I've got older and realized that mental health is also physical health, and we have to be holistic in our approach. And so that's one of the things that really now I really work on, is making sure that I give my body the nutrition and the rest,
yeah,
and the exercise that helps me to not feel anxious and then go to social media. So you can see they're all tied in, really, Eric.
Oh, it is. Thank you, Jim, for sharing that. And it's wild where we use these words and I come up with this statement and link it to drinking in a bar, and you have this story that you share. And this is why I love this, right? Podcasting, meeting people that otherwise would never have talked to you. Maybe in some other universe, or maybe at some other time this would have happened. I don't know. But that is also clarity, right? Doing this keeps me locked in and focused in on the conversation. And people could say, well, why do you have a podcast? Why do you blog? Why do you write? Why do you do these things? Well, this is why. And I think I could take a lot from it for myself, for my family, for my children, for people I work with, whatever comes of it. No one has to listen to this, but this conversation to have been useful to myself, selfishly, let's say, and hopefully someone else, you know, take something from it, which would be awesome. But,
and I think exactly that, and I'm, you know, flattered that you and I can be on this together. I mean, the Chapel Hill and the North Carolina, yeah, connection, yeah, is there. But also, what I also make sure of is that not drinking, it's funny that we have a term in society that not drinking means somehow you're abstaining. You know, you still drink, but I drink no alcohol beer. It's lovely. And no alcohol wine. So you can still meet people in a bar. I still love your company.
Right.
And it's not that you're being a hermit, right? And you're not socializing. It's just that, right, you're socializing, but not poisoning yourself at the same time. And so I think this whole idea of podcasting, you and I have a connection. If other people find any of what we're chatting about of value, then that's a real bonus, right? But, yeah, even, you know, one-on-one connection is actually, coming all the way back to social anxiety, one-on-one connection is what humans really crave. We need social acceptance, but actually we want one-on-one,
yeah,
connection. They're a little bit different. So that's what we really need from these kind of conversations.
I agree. Well, it's when you go to a party and you know there's a lot of people are going to be there, and the fear sets in. You talk to people and you think about yourself going through these moments. How are you going to talk to all these people? What, for me, what often comes out of it is, let's say you and I were there and we didn't know each other and somehow we got introduced, or somehow we bumped into each other. We're both going to get a drink of some sort, right? At the same time. Hey, how are you doing? We start talking and then we have this type of conversation. Why did you order a club soda? I don't know, right? And then it just goes on and on. And it's that one person that you engage with. It's not the 100 small interactions that you had. How's your summer going? Were you going on vacation? What do you think of this? How's the weather? How are you doing? Pretty good. Right? All those basic conversations that don't leave this, that one-on-one interaction that you could have in a party of 100 is more, I guess the word fulfilling than if you just had happened to talk to 100 people in small increments.
Well, I think, Eric, maybe it's also just worth identifying as well, this is also a function of age, right? That what happens when you're very young at home with the parents, you're interested in being just in and around your family. And then when you've got kids as well, you've mentioned, you know, your son's playing soccer at university. Now, when the kids are reaching, you know, 13, 14, teenage years, they're much less interested in the parents and they're interested in larger numbers of people, right? They're interested in group things, by and large. I mean, some kids are interested in being with ones and twos, but on the whole, that sort of social selection is taking place at teenage to early 20s, right? So where actually, you don't want to waste too much time on one person at a time when you're 20, because frankly, you're picking and mixing, right? You're sorting, you're looking at
sure
who's going to be the best kind of girlfriend or boyfriend and which crew do you want to be in, right? So it's inevitable at university, you go to lots and lots of things until people start to pair off. And then as we get older, like, you know, I'm 50s and you look as though you're probably in your 20s still, but I think you probably, please, if you've got a son in his 30s, you must be 35, I reckon. You know, then the conversation changes because we've got sort of questions that we're looking at in our hearts and minds that we want to talk to people who've got wisdom, as opposed to, you know, a physical connection. You then want a mental and an emotional connection, and you can't do that at scale. So it's worth, I think, you know, just seeing that our needs change as our age changes, and each one of those is absolutely fine and valid. And it's not about being in one and that not being right. You know, we change during the context of our lives.
For sure. Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because I'll watch my kids, because they use Snapchat or Instagram to communicate. And sometimes I wonder, how do you balance it all? How do you communicate with all these people? And then I see them come to an event that he has, and you see all of these people. It's an investment of your time. They don't think of it like that. And why should they? And I agree with you that it's definitely age dependent. I've been coming into this time and to think about who you want to spend time with. Who don't you want to spend time with? And saying no and saying yes to other things, but then watching kids and how they interact on Snapchat and have all these chats going. They come out of practice and they're just boom, 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 boom. There's just all go. But they're doing it. And it's the way they interact. It's the way they engage, it's the way they stay engaged. It's the way they make new friends. And like you said, not spending, they'll spend time with certain people more than others, but then they're able to branch out and then they're able to discover, I can't trust this person. This happened. Or they want me to do these drugs and I'm not about that. I'm out. Anyway, it's all these things are, if someone's ever listening, right? Like, what do they take from that, right? It's not about this is the only way. It's thinking through it. We don't have the answers for sure, right? There's thousands of podcasts. It's just fascinating to talk about and I guess pontificate about. So
yeah, we are.
Yeah,
I think though that we started off talking about mental health, you know, and I think this whole issue now of mental health is so important because for young people, there is a question of where does it all lead to. And I think that one of the aspects of the work that I'm doing now is helping people in their 50s, an older generation, think about how they scale out of their business. Because we started this conversation with when is enough, right? If with the anxiety of doing more and more and more. And you see YouTube creators, content creators, and influencers burning out, right? They keep trying to get more and more and more. And a few of them, like Vaynerchuk or whatever, so they get across the Rubicon, right? They go into that kind of Valhalla state where they tweet that they've had a hamburger and everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe he's had a hamburger.
Right.
but, you know, there have always been celebrities throughout the years, stars of the silver screen or whatever, right? There's always celebrities. Society always needs those. But I think part of what I'm seeing is the need for people to know what they want as a result of what they're doing. So the social media isn't the end in itself, is I guess what I'm saying. So
yeah.
What I'm working on with clients now, entrepreneurs now, is how do you build a social media presence, content, and that is leading to lead generation and is creating a funnel that's creating a brand for your business that creates sales that don't require you as an individual anymore, as an owner. Because once you solve the problem, leads come to the business, not as a function of the owner, but as a function of the brand, you've got an asset you can sell.
Mm.
And the companies that are really successful transcend the personal brand or the owner and become self-functioning businesses. Maybe look at Apple, obviously being a great example. You know, it's Steve Jobs, but then eventually we see that it was really pretty Tim Cook and the team for many, many years. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been so successful after Steve Jobs has passed away, had a role. But I think this answer of when to stop is to identify when is it enough. So for me, I sold my business in Singapore last year to some young guys who were the next generation of running a PR firm. And what they wanted to buy in was a 25-year-old brand, East West Public Relations, that was generating leads and had got a reputation and was on, you know, award-winning lists and had got blogs out there and got domain authority on the website and so on, right? So there's a whole brand that you can build as a business owner. And I think that that for me is when the metric starts to come in as about when it's enough. It's when it's fulfilling its objective. The objective as an entrepreneur is the marketing is generating new leads, attracting employees. It's not about feeding the ego. It's about feeding the economic machine.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. The podcasting component that you've done with it, I think you're 700 plus episodes.
I got a very flat bottom from sitting down so much.
Yeah. And yet you keep going, you keep learning about it. And I mentioned to you before, like one of the reasons I just enjoy this is these types of conversations. Why do you podcast? Why have 700 plus episodes? You've obviously gotten into a lot of your whys already, but just that thought alone on podcasting.
I think on podcasting, it's that I'm curious. At the end of the day, I get to meet amazing people like yourself all over the world. I've had 300 guests on the show, and I learn something new from every one of them, Eric. And that's an amazing gift to be given every day. That I have a podcast with somebody, they share with me something that they've learned, right? And my podcast for me is just a, like, it's an amazing sort of college. And people are giving me one-on-one lessons. And I've had people who run big companies, people who run small companies, women entrepreneurs, ethnic minorities, people in India, people in America. And I get an amazing breadth of experience that I could never possibly, as a white, middle-aged man in the West Country of England, get access to.
Yeah.
So the podcast is just this amazing, like, college of life for me, where I'm kind of getting one-to-one tuition with people that I've defined as being the tutors that I would like in my life.
Yeah.
I interview individuals that are doing interesting things as entrepreneurs. And I get to ask them one central question: how do you get noticed? There are many other questions I could ask, but that's the thing that I would like to know. And so the podcast as a platform gives anybody who's a host the opportunity to reach out and get answers from people that they otherwise might not get a chance to talk to.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing platform. And then, you know, what I do is I make these into articles and then into books. So I've got two books published so far with Wiley. And so it's just an amazing kind of value chain where I get to meet interesting people like yourself, Eric.
Yeah.
Learn some things. And then the final part of that is that I get to share what I've learned with other people who otherwise wouldn't get to meet those people.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we haven't talked about, Eric, is serving others. And all the sort of self-actualization is great, but it's pointless if I'm selfish with it. So one of the missions that I have is that I can talk to people from around the world, get their wisdom, and I can share it with other people who wouldn't be able to get that on their own, as the articles, as the books and the podcast. So
yeah,
in that sense, the podcast, it's a microphone and a mic and a screen. It's an amazingly powerful way to kind of transcend geography and ignorance.
It is. When you think about the power of it, the audio coming through the ears of someone listening to you.
Yeah.
And when you talked about brand before, there's this consistent message, the consistent tone, consistency with you, Jim, with a lot of people that you hear. When you listen to Joe Rogan, it's very consistent in how he thinks about things. And you, once you've listened to many, many episodes, you get it. So if I called Joe on the phone, I would feel the same and no different. You know, I've seen it with businesses where these large companies, they tout customer service or they tout diversity, but then you talk to them and it's like, that's just the line that they're putting out there. It's very inconsistent when you call the airline to say, no, there's some very large disconnect that's going on here.
Yeah.
Whereas an entrepreneur in a small business, we have the opportunity and really a must to have a consistent message, to keep it, you know, if you hear me on a podcast, if you read a blog post, if you talk to someone who works for us, right? If you talk to me, there's consistency in that. No different. If you're going to have 700 plus episodes, you're going to get your message, your tone. I'm going to understand it. So when I do finally talk to you or someone on your team, I'm going to know what I'm dealing with right away. And I think that's super powerful as well. In the, I guess, the gratitude, the enjoyment, the get-to attitude that you have with all of it, like that's inspiring. That's what keeps someone like me. I could listen like, wow, this, I can keep going, right? Like, why stop now? This is too much fun. And maybe it's not even fun. It's the, like you said before, the learning, the education that you get of having an individual that you get to talk to, who's talked to 700 plus people, who's run businesses, who's written books, who's asked all sorts of questions. I get to spend, let's say 45 minutes, hour, what have you, with that individual. I couldn't do that without this microphone.
Well, we could. We'd be in a bar somewhere.
For sure. Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, it gives everyone really an excuse to call, right?
Yeah.
And the access you get because you've got the mic and the credibility of the show does put you in a different league. And I think from a positioning point of view, as an individual, it does give one the opportunity to have sort of some stature. So if you say, I'm just going to chat to you in the bar, that's nice, but I'm kind of thinking it's a little bit transitory and do I really want to invest that time in that conversation? But if someone's got a podcast and they've got a track record and you can see what they've done with the website and you can see what they've done with the show notes and you can see what they do transcript, you can see how professional they are, you can see how consistent they are. Actually, you can build a really good profile of whether you want to be talking to that person or not. And that person is really sort of creating an embodiment of their personal values within the podcast. And that sends a very big and clear message to the person who's going to come and talk to you.
Yeah.
Right? So I love what you're doing with the show. And you come across as being professional and organized and considered and engaging. So I'm going, well, those are kind of some pre-qualifications for me spending my precious time with somebody. Right. So the podcast gives us some, if like pre-qualifications in a world where we're maybe bombarded with invitations of social media with various bits and bobs, having a podcast and podcast hosts is kind of like becoming a club, right? Well, there's some barriers to entry here. Eric has got a podcast. I've got a podcast. We're in the same tribe, right? We must have some similar values. And I think that's also a great aspect of the podcast.
Yeah. All well said. The Unnoticed Entrepreneur. Obviously, Apple Podcasts, where can I learn about it? Because you have the two books that are out. You have the many blogs that are out. Where's the best way to learn about you and the Unnoticed Entrepreneur?
Yeah, thank you, Eric. Well, I'm just jimajames.com is my website. And on Linktree, Jim A. James as well. And if you go to either one of those two, then that'll take you to the show, which is theunnoticed.cc. But just jimajames.com. Eric is, I think, the simplest, not the prettiest website. I got to say, I'm challenged on that side with the mouse, but the details are there and the content is there. So I'd welcome, obviously, connections and people can find me on LinkedIn as well as Jim A. James to Eric. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Jim, the content is definitely there. There's a lot of content. And, you know, if you're sitting at a bar and it's smoky and the game's on and it's loud, if you're still having that great conversation with that one individual, it's worth it. So, Jim, I appreciate it. I've enjoyed this conversation. Sometimes I get on these and you just never know who you're going to be talking, like where that conversation is going to go. But this is good stuff. Thank you.
Eric, thank you. Yeah, so it's kind of blind dating with microphones, right, isn't it, Eric? And I definitely got lucky today. So
yeah,
thank you, mate.
That's great. Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed.
In case you haven't noticed, we love podcasts. In fact, we love building podcasts, everything from development to production. Because of all that, we're building a one-of-a-kind podcast network. If you have a podcast or looking to launch a new podcast, then we should talk. You can message me on Twitter at @Eric_Kaz or hit us up any way that works for you. Let's talk about your podcast joining this one-of-a-kind podcast network.